Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There we go, Matt. My voice even cracked a little bit there in anticipation and excitement. Wow. Yet again, another game, another absolute savaging, mauling. How you feeling after that?
We're getting used to it, aren't we? We're spoilt. Just the way that, you know, there was a moment where we couldn't buy an away win for love nor money a few seasons ago. And now we're just going on the road. We're emptying stadiums. It's an Arsenal phenomenon. We're the only people in the league doing it. I'll have to get the exact stats, but our form since Dubai is absolutely frightening. We've scored the most. We've conceded the least. The football's breathtaking. Every player is a 10 out of 10 right now. Unreal what we're doing.
It is. And, you know, I like to try and come up with metaphors to try and illustrate just how severe the dominance is. And I'm going to actually save it for the hottest of takes. But it's hard to put into words what we're doing on a weekly basis now. We're talking about legendary Premier League attacking units right now. I'm not saying, you know, the story is even complete with us right now, but we are scoring at a clip that has basically not been seen before. Every time you turn up, you're getting fours and fives and sixes. It's dangerous. I love it. I can't wait to talk about it. So should we fire into the podcast proper, Matt?
Let's do it.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good evening and welcome to... I'm sorry, I'm giddy. I'm not apologising, actually. I am giddy like a little schoolboy. Yet again, another game, another team that's caught them hands. What do you want to know? The end of the day, Arsenal are the Premier League bullies. If you show up in the wrong part of town, you get the treatment like everyone else. I'm here with man like Matt Candelo, who's another man who can't wipe the smile off his face right now. Tell me some of the buzzwords for some of the emotions you were feeling watching that game.
Awe, admiration, excitement, confident. You know, I just think back to a year ago. I forgot to say, happy Reece Nelson Day. We probably should have started the podcast with that. It was exactly a year ago, I think, that Reece Nelson was scoring the winner against Bournemouth 3-2. What a difference a year makes. You know, we weren't able to get it over the line a year ago, but we seem a different team this year. And obviously last year was fantastic and we were 5 points clear at this phase, but there is a steeliness, a determination, a confidence, a sense that we can go the distance. I really feel like that. We've got, 10 games left to go or whatever it is, I have to check, but it feels like we're peaking at the right time. We're peaking with the Etihad at the end of the month. with a big Brentford game next weekend. We don't look like we're running out of gas. We're not relying on last minute winners. And you just love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably going to change the order slightly now and do a different hottest of take. So I'll put this bit in here, okay? Let's try to get some metaphors for what we're seeing on a weekly at the moment, okay? We're seeing Nelson Muntz grab Milhouse and take his pocket money and his lunch money, okay? Just straight up bullying. We are seeing Prime Mike Tyson. And I remember an anecdote about Prime Mike Tyson, who not only was obviously the champion of the world, heavyweight champion of the world, but was also going to a bar, a rowdy bar. And I've heard stories that he cleared bars at times. Someone would start on him and anyone in his wake just gets smashed. Everyone's waking up like a couple of days later. What happened? Mike Tyson knocked you out. That's it. That's what we're starting to be like. And do you know what else? If we want to distill it into an image, because I think the really endearing image I put out there recently, which I think is really starting to hit home about Omar from The Wire. But what that was today, out there today, was like, do you know in Jurassic Park, where you haven't really seen many dinosaurs yet, you know, certainly not the carnivorous ones, and they put a goat in the middle of the field, and then all of a sudden you start hearing boom, 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 and it's a T-Rex. And the next thing, lightning flash, and the goat's in the T-Rex mouth. That's what Sheffield United were. They were a sacrifice. And we're the T-Rex just eating anything in our path. Devastating, Matt. Truly devastating. And that is the only way I can liken it to. We are beyond bullies right now. And I fucking love it.
Oh, me too. We're just big T-Rexes going around. Declan Rice, Gabrielle, Saliba. They're just going and munching.
I love it. Should we jump into this?
Hottest of takes.
Hottest of takes.
The hottest of
takes. The AOP hottest of takes. Make it spicy.
Yes, Matt. We know how we start our podcast, don't we? We need absolute red hot spice to put something like Nando's sauce to shame. So what have you got for me that's going to get really spicy right now?
My hottest of takes is something that I really, really missed in the first half of the season that we saw a fair bit last season, and then it just disappeared. I don't know what happened to it, was the fast start. And I think it was so exciting last season just seeing us come out and just go right for the jugular for the first minute. And then first half of the season, we stopped doing it for whatever reason, and we started hearing all about this need for control and blah, blah, blah. Well, since the calendar year changed and it became 2024, the fast start is back. And I love it because I feel like you can see in the very first minute or the second minute, you literally can see what Arsenal are all about. We could have scored four goals in the first 3 minutes. It was unreal. But when you start that fast and start that hard, you really get the opportunity to really unsettle teams, especially teams that are a little bit low on confidence. We literally broke Sheffield United inside about 60 seconds today. They were like, oh my God, these people are operating on a different planet. They're so much faster. They're so much bigger. They're so much more aggressive. The passing's unreal. And they're not leaving here until they've done some serious damage. And you can just see it. They were physically scared. A Premier League team was physically scared by how imposing we were and the way we imposed ourselves on the game. So my hottest of takes is I'm so pleased that the fast starts are back. And you can see it because you can basically put the game out of sight so early, and the opportunity to get players on, get players off, give Thomas Partey minutes, get Gabby Jesus minutes, is just really, really going to serve us really, really well. So my hottest of takes is just a sense of gratitude about the fast starts and the way that the game was ultimately over after 16 minutes, which is just wonderful.
I love that. Absolutely red hot and roasting. Matt, I'm going to go in a slightly different direction, but obviously it's all going to be positive today. Goodness gracious me. I'm going to go into the direction of a bit of a comparison between this year and last year, and at a similar point where we are in the season. So last year, on a few occasions, I would come on this pod and I would say we are the best team in the league. And one of the reasons why I was saying we are the best team in the league at that point was because I was having to point to the league and say, we're top of the league, so we're the best team in the league, rather than perhaps City supporters or indifferent, you know, non-biased supporters were going, yeah, but just watch the games. Watch what City do when they turn it on. They're better than everyone. Haaland's a nutter. He's scoring all the time. De Bruyne is better. You know, so there was always that comparison where it would be Arsenal fans going, yeah, but we're top. But everyone else going, look at the games and tell me who's the best team. This year, we are the best team in the league, and you don't need to look at the league title. Anyone who gets near us gets absolutely roughed up. Rough housing. They get the treatment. We're like a spa right now offering a 4, 5, or 6 treatment. Which one do you want? It's going to be one of them. Every single team that faces us right now are thinking about how they can keep the score down. I know we're going to talk about the particulars of this, but the fact that right now, if you just watch an individual game of all three of the main protagonists and you say, you get someone who hasn't been paying attention, who's the best team in the league? It's not close. We are absolutely looking like the standout unit. And to be honest, when you keep playing like this, I know it's a different pedigree completely, but when we go to the Etihad, they are going to start being really alarmed by what they're seeing. Like, oh, okay. I'm sure they're not thinking they're going to get 5s and 6s, but they might be thinking, do you know what? That, you know, things could start to slip away from us, just like it did with Liverpool. 3-1 that day, but completely dominated against a team that are, you know, our closest rivals. We look like the best team, and that is my hottest of takes.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to that game. I don't think there's a single Arsenal fan out there who would say, or any fan that would say, we did ourselves justice last year at the Etihad. I think it was a meek performance. I think, you know, I don't want to use the word bottle, but we're gone. The legs are gone. The heart has gone. We've been broken by that string of 3 draws and the injuries that happened at the same time. We couldn't find a way through it. So I do think we've got some unfinished business there. It will mean nothing if we don't beat Brentford on Saturday. Absolutely nothing, because we have that's an absolute 100% must win game. But yeah, I'm really excited about how we're peaking at the right time this season. Look, this time last year we had peaked. We're on the way down. This year, let's see if there's still more room for improvement.
Well, we're looking like a fucking juggernaut. Let's be honest. Anyone who... Brentford. Are you kidding me? Brentford are... And don't get me wrong, they're a live bet against any team. We saw what they did to City last year, 6 points off them. So we'd be foolish to think that, you know, it can never happen. But they must be absolutely cursing their luck that they're rolling into our patch. Could get really out of hand. What's the over and under on scores? I think it's going to be 4 goals at least. You know what I mean? For how many we score against them. Remember, this is not the Brentford defensive unit that we saw last year. Obviously, Ivan Toney will be trying to make a name for himself and trying to get himself a move to the hottest ticket in town, you know. But listen, right now, it doesn't matter who you are. Probably outside of Liverpool and Man City and arguably Tottenham, just because there's a special... you know, a bit of sauce to that game, anything can happen. No one will be heading into a game against us thinking, you know, they can live with us. So it's going to be terrifying. And I just love it. It's so good. Right now, but the key word, Matt, for what you were saying, the difference between this year and last year heading into that City game is I think what the team had lost, particularly after that first goal, De Bruyne broke away, belief. The belief was so fragile at that point. Right now, I look at the way we're playing and we ooze belief. We believe that we are going to do something this year, and it feels like a credible belief right now, you know?
It is, and we'll get on to it because I don't want to start with it. But, you know, I did feel very similar last year. And then we had the Sporting Lisbon game and we lost Tomiyasu and Saliba. And that was really, you look back and that game was the turning point. Even though I think we drew the game in the end, it wasn't the worst scoreline. But I'm constantly worried about injuries, and I want to get some clarity on that Martinelli knock and the Saka. Was he very unlike Mikel Arteta to take him off at halftime, especially when he's got a scoring record that he's going after? So I'm a little bit anxious about those two, because if we lost Saka and Martinelli for a few weeks, it changes everything.
I am quite bullish on Saka. I don't know this, but I had Saka as my captain in my fantasy league this week. And in the first half, he'd already outscored Erling Haaland, who, you know, so he didn't even get his full performance points. I digress. The fact is now I'm actually worried about making certain Arsenal players, you know, your captain or not, because they might not finish the game because we're out of sight at halftime. They're not even getting their performance points anymore. People are, you know, off in the bar getting drinks at halftime because they're like, I'm not playing anymore. There's no need. We've beat them up. You know what I mean? Call the dogs off. Spectacular performance. And quite frankly, I can't wait to get into this, Matt. It's going to be great. Do you know what? It's all positive. So let's just go to a little bit of a, you know, a subject that came up, which is actually quite Sheffield United focused, but it's what we do to other teams. You will have noticed in the first half, after 16 minutes, there was so I've never seen it before, Matt. Honestly, I can't remember that happening. After 16 minutes, there were substitutions being made to try to tighten things up defensively when you're 3-0 down, because you're like, this is going to become a cricket score real, real bad. And ultimately, we scored another 3 goals. Matt, have you ever seen anything like this for how teams are looking when they face us? They look terrified.
Well, I think that's what we used to talk about City. And we used to say they had the beating of the team before they walked out on the pitch. And it was something that we didn't have. It felt like we had to earn the right to win the game on the pitch. But I think we're getting that aura around us. I feel like teams, it's just, I think it's just the sheer physical size of us. Because in the past, there was always this sense of, oh, we know they're a good team, but we might be able to outwork them. We might be able to bully them. We might be able to physically impose ourselves on them in the way that we lost that game at Everton last season. You know, that we lost that game 1-0. It was we got dished. The reality is we cannot be dished. And the main reason for that, in my opinion, is Declan Rice. He's the game changer in terms of that. Because you've got him, you've got Saliba, you've got Gabriel. Everyone is absolutely massive. Then you've got Kai, who I can't believe we used to think this guy was a shrinking violet. He's absolutely massive. You know, he's 6'4", he puts himself about. So we've just added this pace and power through the team. And I think that's intimidating for teams. And City have got it, you know, with Erling Haaland and Rodri. It's like, you can't do that to us anymore. Remember, people used to say, oh, Arsenal don't like it up them. They don't like travelling to the north of England. Rainy Monday night could be a recipe for disaster. Well, not anymore. So yeah, I think we've got that sort of that halo around us. And I think we're beating teams before they even walk out on the pitch.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, let's be honest. And this is an Arsenal podcast, so we're not going to focus on Sheffield United too much. But they're not good enough. They're not of the quality that this league is needed. If we could try to put it in another term, if this was a computer game, call it FIFA, these are NPCs, non-playable characters. They're just generic men. They're not Premier League standard. They're just people called Jack Smith, like, you know, coming on. Just no one knows who you are. You're not special football. And I want to be serious. They're Premier League footballers. They'd make me look like, you know, an absolute clown. So obviously they're of a level. But you're coming up against one of the very best teams in Europe right now. And we're giving you that work. And you can't live with it. You have to remember Saka's hit the bar in the first minute. That could be 7. There was a goal cleared off the line, a ball cleared off the line in the same passage of play. This is, you know, it could be 7, 8, 9, 10. Saka's coming on. You know, at the end of the day, this is getting out of hand week in, week out. And if there was such a thing, you'd have managers throwing in white towels and saying, that's it. You've beaten us in the first half. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, Matt. When's the last time, you know, we went away from home and they had a full stadium by the end of the game? Sending people home.
A crazy stat that someone just sent is that Sheffield United completed 142 passes today. That's not very many. William Saliba completed 27 more than Sheffield United. He completed 169 passes. You just start looking at those types of statistics. And, you know, I know all points are equal, but especially when you look at what Liverpool did, the Liverpool performance against Nottingham Forest, they weren't good. I know they eked out the win, but it wasn't pretty, it wasn't good. And then you compare it to our performance and the utter domination that we're delivering on the regular, and it's impossible not to be hugely impressed. And it's just, you know, I think Mike McMullen's in the comments, I like the pace, power and guile all over the pitch. I mean, how many years were we missing brute strength? And I think we could all see it. We're like, why are we all so small? Why can we be bullied? Why have we got all these technical operators who, you know, just we end up getting beaten up when we go away from home? We can do it at home, but we can't do it away. Well, now we've got the operators. We really do.
Yeah, I just think that's so true. And, you know, we always like, you know, I always like to use the metaphor once again, because we've talked quite heavily on this podcast about the mental side of it in terms of peaking at the right time and not having, you know, kind of blown your effort and energy levels for the run in and then not having enough to get you over the line. When we liken it to, you know, a marathon, if you like, long distance running, one of the things that can really defeat, you know, a runner is when they kick. And when they do kick, the other person goes with them and they show you that they've still got another gear to go. That's how Mo Farah used to win his races all the time, because he could live with your kick, but he'd get you into the final running and go, I've got devastating pace, and you just won't be able to live with it. And that is what this year looks like to me. We look like Mo Farah because we're sticking with everything Liverpool are doing, everything City are doing. Yeah, we're winning all the time. But you know that the way we're winning and the way you're winning, completely different. You're grinding it out. And I'm not saying, you know, what we're doing will last forever. We might not be able to win 6-0 for the rest of the games of the season. But right now, it must be so hard mentally for them, being like, yeah, we're grinding out results, and then looking over and just seeing Arsenal blowing teams to pieces and thinking, you know, we're going to have to keep our levels high because these guys are making it look easy. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for me is I think it's people are getting very anxious about every time Liverpool win and Man City win and go, oh, they're not going to slip up. They're not going to do this. They're not going to do that. There's so much of the season left. This is how we were last season. We hadn't even begun to slide. There's more than, we've got, you know, 11 games left. 11 games, 33 points. Think about all the things that's going to happen in those games. It's, you know, there's a whole nother world. The last five games are a run in on their own. You know, right now we could be 5 points behind the leaders and still have a decent chance of winning the league. There's still plenty of time, plenty of games. But I do agree, it's about just staying with it, staying the course, keeping your head about you, and recognizing that really the run-in doesn't really start until April. It really doesn't. You've got to stay in contention, but it doesn't really start until after the City game in a way.
That is very, very true. Now, let's move on to focusing on one or two standout performers. Listen, if anyone's sitting there like, oh my God, you've got to talk about that, there are about 11 and even some subs that came on as well. 11 players we could talk about today. It was an absolutely outrageous performance, but we have to pick, you know, some to look at. Martinelli, marauding. This guy looked to me like he was rounding into top form. Absolutely unplayable when he's like this. Clearly, they had to resort to kicking him towards the end. And, you know, what we will bundle into this section, Matt, is the kind of worrying images we saw as he was hobbling off, and ultimately where you think that injury may, you know, shake out at, whether you're that worried. But what did you make of Gabby Martinelli's performance today?
Oh, he looked from the very first minute like he was determined to make it his game. And when he's in that mood and when he's got that space and when he's up against those defenders, he's unplayable. There was one moment where he just had knocked the ball past the defender and then sprinted off the pitch and round him. So just, it was unreal. I love seeing Gabby Martinelli in that mood. Obviously worried about the injury, but the latest news, it seems Arteta has said in the press conference, it's just a small cut, which is good, because I had a fear. You know what word I was thinking about? I was sort of scarred from 2006 or whenever it was, but I just had a concern it could be a metatarsal, you know, stamp on the foot, you break your metatarsal and suddenly you're out for 3 months sometimes, you know, because David Beckham had it famously. I think Wayne Rooney's had it, but it's that sort of stamp on the top of the foot that you can get it. But I'm relieved they're saying a small cut. He was obviously pointing to something. I think they broke his boot or whatever. So relieved with that. The other one, obviously, is Saka coming off at halftime. A couple of reports that he maybe grimaced with a shot, and hopefully that's precautionary. I would imagine that if he felt anything, they're just like, well, look, the game's won. Like, give someone else some minutes. I don't think he would just be rested, because I think he scored it in the last four games, and I think Arteta would like to keep that run on, because it's the kind of thing that, you know, players respond to. So I do feel like there's some niggle or injury, but Saka's very good at listening to his body. He doesn't miss many games, and there certainly wasn't a big muscular injury. Oh, there's rumour now that another rumour.
Feeling sick, apparently.
Feeling sick.
Okay. We'll take that all day. Yeah.
Good.
He's got the shits. Great. Bakayo, go on, sit on the bench for the second half. We don't need you, mate.
Someone else can drive him home. We don't want that spreading on the bus. Or they can lock him in the toilet on the back of the bus. And okay, well, that's looking very delicious.
Wenger's had his lasagna out again. You're not meant to do it on our players, but either way, Bakayo, you can take the second half off, mate. Rest up. And, you know, it has to be said, despite the fact that he got two assists in there, we didn't even need him by the end, did we? But, I thought Martinelli, absolutely unplayable. It was a lovely moment you picked out there, Matt, where he picks the ball up and he looks at the defender, squares him up and goes, see you later, mate. Whack, in front of you. And I'll give you a comparison. Gareth Bale did it against Barcelona in one of the El Clasicos. Actually scored a goal from it. But basically, you got a player at some point going, I am so much faster than you. Watch this. Whack. See you later. Me. And just road running around the side. It was unbelievable. And it was just further, you know, incitement to Sheffield United to just be like, first of all, these guys are taking the piss. And the only way we're going to kind of keep the score down is try and get close, try and rough them up a little bit. I wasn't too worried about Gabby's one. Like you said, I mean, it just seemed like he was pointing to something, to the point that his boot was ripped and, you know, and he was hobbling. But I'm much less worried with situations like that where it's impact rather than, oh, I've pulled up and my hammy's pinged or whatever. Then you are looking at 3 weeks minimum, really. This kind of thing, you got a bruised foot. You're probably going to see him playing up with some strapping at the worst, but I don't even think it will be that, which will be really bad news for Brentford. Because right now, it just seems like, what a turnaround. We're riddled with options because not only are our starters getting at it, but also the subs want to come in and start, you know, start hurting people as well. Should we move on to some subs? Yeah, what did you make of the subs coming on? Fabio Vieira getting involved there as well from the bench. What did you make of the sub impact today, Matt?
I think he wants to get, this is my, because I was like, Fabio Vieira, that's interesting. Like, rather than say a Reece Nelson, I think, and this is my hot take on subs, that he understands that there is no natural replacement for Ødegaard. He doesn't think Smith Rowe can really play that role. And so if Ødegaard has to miss a couple of games later on in the season, the replacement who will come in is Fabio Vieira. He is Ødegaard's replacement. He's the number two. Do you remember in All or Nothing when he had all the names and all the positions? I think he's the understudy. So I think he wants to get him warmed up. I think he's a really important player for us in the run-in, because if Ødegaard, you know, gets a knock and has to miss a game or a few games, we're going to have to run on him. So I thought it was good that he came on. Love Jorginho coming off. Jorginho is now one of our most important players. So we've got to wrap that guy, that guy up in cotton wool, because everything, he's like a can of WD-40. You know what I mean? He just makes the whole machine work. Everything just moves. We just move through the gears better with him. Everything's smooth. He brings that bit of experience with him. And he doesn't need to play all... as soon as the game's won, just get him off, you know? But protect him at all costs. So delighted with that. The subs... Partey, I thought... Some people really like... I thought Partey was we looked rusty. Like some of his touches were not that tight. He lost the ball a few times. But again, what a bonus to get some, you know, a real 35 minutes or whatever it was of real live Premier League football to ease your way back in. You know, he could now be ready to, I mean, he's not going to start because he's got to earn the right to start, but he's definitely going to be coming on and making an impact as a sub for a while. Crazy that he's now no longer good enough to be a first choice in the team.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to go for. I mean, a few months ago, when we thought about Thomas Partey's return, we were like, oh, you can't rush him back. We're going to need to treat him with kid gloves. And he's so important for anything we're going to do this season. Now, it's like, mate, we need you to take some of Jorginho's running towards the end of the game. The fact is if everyone's fit, there's no way he's starting right now. No way. I think that what you're seeing, and I keep returning to it, is how different players are able to bring out, they're able to exemplify other players' talents and bring more out of them. One of the guys we're going to talk about, Kivior, some of his weaknesses are now getting covered by other players that play in there. And Jorginho's deficiencies are being completely, you know, just whisked away by his ability to play next to Declan Rice, who just has everything that Jorginho lacks. So it means that Jorginho is just amplified because he doesn't have any of that stuff to do. Jorginho will always get stuck in, but he's not fast. But when you've got a machine, a freak next to you who can just hoover everything up, then you can just say, well, just give me the ball. And if this is what you want from me, there's no one better around. And I think that at the moment, when you talk about Partey, the guy's coming on. I agree with you, Matt. He looks a bit rusty. I'm not going to have a go at him for that. I've been out a long time. But the level dropped when Jorginho went off, you know. And you know that when we head into a big game, I think it's an immediate Jorginho starting, of course. And what a wonderful position you're in, where Thomas Partey is no longer going to be leaned on for the last 10 games. Oh, can we get you back so you're starting all time? No, mate. You find your feet because you're going to have to displace that guy in the team, and he's playing at an exceptional level.
Well, the only thing I'm wondering is whether, because obviously what's happening at the moment is we've got Jorginho playing the six, and then we've got Declan Rice sort of playing the eight and marauding a bit and getting forward a lot more and, you know, being dangerous in the opposition box as much as anything, but with that recovery pace. Obviously, Jorginho can't play every game. He just doesn't have the... He's just too old. But I do wonder whether if we save Jorginho for the biggest games in the Premier League games and then Thomas Partey comes in as six, Declan Rice is eight. I don't think Gabby Jesus is getting back in the team ahead of Kai Havertz. I just don't. I think we're so much better with Kai up top. I just thought we looked more frustrating when Gabby Jesus came on for me, and that's not maybe everyone's point of view, but he's sort of a danger and he's sort of everywhere, but I just feel like we're a lot more structured. And the form that Kai's in, to think we were laughing at even comparing him to sort of Berbatov, Bergkamp, Kanu, those sorts of players. I mean, every week he's getting better.
Yeah, and you've took it onto this guy now. So let's move over to Kai. Because I was actually going to, you know, segue into it based on something you were saying. And that is that you didn't think Martin Ødegaard was seen as droppable by Arteta and who would kind of sub in. I was actually going to suggest that the form we are now seeing of Kai makes that situation a lot easier. I don't think Mikel Arteta would feel pressure about that because we know how good Trossard can look in this unit as well. And Kai is now offering, I've put Kai 2.0 as the subject here, because what he is doing now, he seems to be like a development. I can't believe I'm even saying this. A development on a number nine. He can do more than what a normal number nine could do. Because if the finishing is going to be absolute rude, like he did today, put me through, whack. Don't bother diving, keeper. I've got that in me. But the runs are so intelligent. You cannot sleep on this guy. He's got physicality. He's tall. He puts himself about. the ability to play on the ball and find passes. It is Dimitar. It is, I'm not going to say Dennis's name. We're not getting it, but it, you know, it's got Ozil vibes. There's, but more range, Robin Van Persie. And I'm not saying he's at any of these levels yet, but you can see it now. You can absolutely see it. And the one thing that I would say on this, we have said over and over again, haven't we? Declan Rice, 105 million. What a bargain that is. Well, I was someone, and I'll hold my hands up, who said 65 million for Havertz. Not that I'm going to say that that was a bad signing at any point on its own, but I felt we needed a striker, and I didn't feel that this addressed it. Boy, oh boy, it looks like a fucking bargain. This guy, how much would he go for right now? Scary performances week in, week out. Talk to me about Kai, Matt.
He's just going next level. I think he's got, I think someone said in the comments, 3 goals, 3 assists in his last 3 games. I have to check that. Yeah, 3 goals and 3 assists in his last 3 matches, says Pazza the Cat. Thank you for that. But he's got the end product. He gives us a real focal point. He's fucking aggressive. That's the bit. Because, I mean, at the beginning, he just looked like this sort of like timid sort of gentle giraffe, didn't he? And now he's a mentality monster. And then you've got those moments. The thing is just also his touch is so good. I think that's what people underestimate. He, at the beginning, it felt like he couldn't trap a bag of cement. But now some of the touches, I think the work that he did to set up Benny Blanco for that finish where he plucked the ball down from Jorginho, it's just astonishing footwork. Then you add the fact that he's got this such a unique profile. He's 6'4". He's rapid. He's fucking strong. He leaves his foot in. He's aggressive. He doesn't get injured, touch wood. You know, and you just go, what a monster. Then you go, well, he plays like an 8, a 9, and a 10. And has the intelligence to play all of them in the same game. So it's not like he's playing out of position as a 9. He's just like fluid. He's just performing multiple different roles. He's like a... it's like a Swiss Army knife. You know, he can just do a ton of stuff that you need to do. And then tactically, he's just so astute. And then, oh, by the way, he'll win every duel. And off the ball, he's fantastic. And he can execute Mikel Arteta's vision. It's just, I mean, he's just absolutely killing it at the moment. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. Mikel Arteta must have been. When all the fans were saying, including myself, what is this guy? What have we done? Mikel Arteta just must have been like, these guys... football fans know so little. You know, what you get when you listen to football fans is Chelsea. You know, every single one of the players that they've signed, I would have been happy to have signed. I would have liked. Yeah, oh, that guy sounds good. Oh, I like him. Yeah, no. Because it's like big names on Twitter. Whereas Mikel Arteta is, it's about the system. It's about the profile. It's about the development opportunity. It's about the mentality. So, yeah, I don't know if it's even Kai 2.0. It's like Kai 3.0. Is that going a whole nother level? And I don't think we've even begun to scratch the surface of what he could do. I'm wondering whether he could be, you know, one of the best players of his generation.
Wow. Generation. Wow, he's putting it out there. We don't hold back after 6-0 wins, third, you know, four plus goal performances in a row. Look, what can I say to add to that? I think part of where it comes from when you think about football fans and perhaps their naivety that Arteta might, you know, judge in comparison to his own view is, you kind of touched on it, Matt, but ultimately we look for players and profiles and ultimately we want, you know, proof of concept players, players that are already doing something that you can go, can we cut and paste what they're doing for their team and put it into ours? Now, ultimately, Arteta is looking at players and going, this is what I want to do. Who do I think is not already doing it? Because I'm trying to do something that no one's actually doing right now. So can I find a player who has the profile who could execute the things I want to do? And when you've got a tall, rangy guy with a touch as good as anyone's, and maybe he's not at the, you know, the levels required from a finishing point of view. This is not Erling Haaland as a finisher, although he probably, you know, he could fool you into thinking after today's finish. That was disgusting. But ultimately, you've got a guy who can can do it all. And I just want to hone in on the fact that his runs in that number nine position, you can't always teach players to do that. His time of his runs today were absolutely excellent. It's been something that's been happening for a number of games now. He is so hard to pick up. This isn't just about bullying Sheffield United. Look at how Van Dijk had a really hard time with Kai and his movement. He was at Liverpool from the start of the game and he was causing chaos. And he is doing it again and again and again. And we can't get carried away because form, you know, is temporary. But right now, the way that he's playing, it seems to be more of a class is permanent situation with Kai. And it looks like something that he can recreate week in, week out, because he is just this good. And it looks like he can actually get better than what he currently is rather than just revert back to, you know, poor form.
I agree, because he's not really like, just hit, it's not like everything he's hitting is flying in. It's not really about the finishing. It's about the all-round performance, the all-round game, the ability to provide a focal point, set other players up and everything. So I don't think it's going anywhere. That's what I'm really, really excited about.
Let's talk about Benny Blanco, okay? The guy, another guy who, let's be honest, earlier in the season, I put it out there a few times, by no means, you know, having shockers or anything, but wasn't quite at the level we'd seen him in the past. There's been a few occasions this season where we saw him losing out in one-on-one defending situations, which is very rare for Ben White. I'm thinking, you know, up against Ross Barkley in particular. Didn't shroud himself in glory that night. Since the Dubai break, and we know Ben likes a bit of sun. Of course he does. He likes to dress up in a little bit of his Love Island gear. And he comes back and he's looking like, you know, they did a whole piece in the Monday Night Football today about John Stones and his role. I think Ben White is playing at an obscene level. He's dropping into midfield and absolutely running the show, but also showing he can defend at a very high level. Benny Blanco, Matt, what is going on with him? And is he back to his best?
Well, just one final point that you reminded me of is, can you imagine if Pep Guardiola had done what Arteta's done with Kai Havertz? We would all be like, the guy's an absolute genius if he took Kai and did exactly what Arteta's done. So just one to noodle on and think about it. They'd be like, oh, he's gone 3D, 5D chess on the Premier League with Kai.
Yeah.
But Benny Blanco, I think, is just, I'm so happy to see him getting back in form. I think he's a mentality monster. I think there's been rumours, but I'm pretty sure he was dealing with an injury, through an injury. And that's the thing about Benny Blanco. We had no options. We've got Timber's got injured for the season. You know, there's no cover at right back. I mean, what's the Tomiyasu? You can't be relied upon from an injury standpoint. He's a really good player when he's fit. So Benny Blanco is the guy. He's the full guy. He's the guy who has to deal with it and play through an injury. I think Rob Holding once said he played with a hamstring tear. The guy's so tough. And so, you know, I love seeing him marauding, getting forward, contributing to the play. He's such a good footballer. I think someone said he's played midfield, he's played centre half, he's played right back. He's one of the few players who's scored in every division of English football, which I just think sums it up, because he knows how good it is.
Sick.
People were saying, you don't like watching football, you know, trying that old one. He goes, no, but I love playing it and I love playing for this Arsenal team. And that for me just sums him up. Yeah, he wants to relax. He goes, training's intense. The things we have to learn, the things we have to be good at are intense. I want to rest and relax when I'm home. But make no mistake, this guy's a competitor. And if anyone thinks that someone's coming for that right back spot, I mean, you wouldn't bet against Benny Blanco, against anyone in the world, because it's his.
100%. And when you start to see how accomplished he is, this is what is returning back to what I was saying earlier about how there are different combinations of players that can unlock systems available to Arteta now. We worried about Kivior and his ability to, you know, invert. And then suddenly we're like, you know what, Jakob, don't bother inverting anymore, because we're actually going to switch the burden of inverting to our other fullback, who's a top football player. And then Ben White started doing it. And so suddenly we get the benefit of Kivior's defensive, you know, solidity, but with also a little bit of a flair for burning forward from Jakob Kivior, and another outstanding performance for him today. But, you know, just like Rice facilitates Jorginho. Ben White facilitates Kivior. And we've never looked more solid than what we do right now. Maybe, you know, Tomiyasu, similar levels of, you know, defensive prowess. But Kivior is playing at an exceptionally high level. So we look absolutely sound as a pound at the back, but also looking like we've got constant options on the overlap. Ben White's playing his best footballs, as is Kivior. Jorginho pulling the strings. It just really feels like Arteta has found combinations that have, you know, increased his potential tenfold. And whereas you looked at a squad that seemed a little bit bare earlier on in the season, suddenly, by putting players in different formations and different combinations, suddenly we look like, oh no, we've got loads of options, because we know that Trossard can play in a few. We know that Ben White can do this role. We know that Jorginho can come in and add quality. And suddenly we look like, you know, the cupboards are bountiful at the Emirates.
They are bountiful. And, you know, this left-back situation could have been an absolute fucking nightmare. You know, Zinchenko's out, Tomiyasu's out, Timber's out. No one to play down there. We could be really, really vulnerable. And yet Kivior, who's not a left-back, has come in and just staked a claim to it with some really phenomenal, not just his performances, but his attitude I've loved. I mean, no-look assist. That's all I'm going to say. The no-look assist that he put on a plate for I think it was the Martinelli goal, was unreal. That's a man with confidence flowing through his veins. Now, do I want him to start at left-back against City? I don't know. I don't know, but I don't know. The thing about it is it really depends. Would I want Tomiyasu there instead? Maybe.
I want Kivior. I'm happy with Kivior, mate.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's talk Kivior, okay? Because we can do a little a section for him. But first of all, this is the case for Kivior, okay? The case for Kivior. If you want to play Zinchenko, you've got a situation where defensively, that is where Pep Guardiola would go, listen, he's a guy that we ultimately got rid of. And yes, we said it at the time. He raised the level at Arsenal. There's no question about it. But we are now starting to move to a level that is higher than what Zinchenko is putting out week in, week out over the course of a season. Absolutely, he can play in a squad that, you know, facilitates a champion's season. But in big crunch games, that would be the area that I would target because of his lack of pace. Kivior seems like someone who is a defend first kind of player. And up against the likes of Phil Foden, I think you need someone who's going to offer that physicality. Kivior looked quick today as well. On a couple of occasions where they did try and get in, it looked like you were going to struggle to get, you know, a cheap change out of him. So for me, I want a defend-first kind of guy. I want to be defensively sound. Because right now, even against City, you're thinking, we are going to score goals against them. Because, listen, anyone who showed up against us, they can't contain us. Everyone's catching lefts and rights off us. So I would back us to score without, you know, the attacking prowess of Zinchenko being involved in the team. But we absolutely should focus on remaining defensively sound the way that we have recently.
Well, let me tell you a couple of interesting stats. 4 goals and assists in just over 5 games for Kivior. He has more assists in 2024 than Bruno Fernandes. You can't make this up at the moment. Everyone is, you know, and then obviously he added the no-look assist today, which was absolutely sensational. So, you know, he was tucking in as a 9 for some of our attacks today. Really, really solid performance. And if you'd said, you know, the fact that he's just taken all these minutes at left back through a tricky part of the season is it's full credit to him. He's on his, if we win the league, he's a cult hero. Done.
Oh yeah. He's sleeping in a Jules Grimondi t-shirt right now, isn't he? And they'll get to go to, in the stadium, there's a little room, or there should be, for the cult heroes. You will get, basically, not everyone's pass works to get through those doors.
He'll be dining with Luzhny and Grimondi.
Jules Grimondi. Kivior's pass gets him in there. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There's the opportunity, Jakob. Make yourself a cult hero. Let's move on, shall we, Matt? A couple of other players. Got to be talking about Ødegaard. Martin Ødegaard orchestrating that he was... I said a few weeks ago I thought the level could be going up. I know other people were saying that they were already impressed. I think a lot of what I was talking about, you know, that's been quelled now. He's playing at exceptionally high level. When he gets an opportunity, he's not faffing around anymore. It just goes in and just completely pulling the strings. What's going on with the captain right now? Just playing at a different pace to most players, eh?
Yeah, just so much more aggressive on the front foot, covering every blade of grass. I think it's just the aggression. You know, even when you were urging the press at 5-0, saying box him in, chasing everything down. I mean, we've just got to keep him fit. There's so many games in April. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous that there's so few games in March and so many in April. It's just dim, frankly, that they haven't figured that out and figured out a better way of making this all happen. But I'm just praying that he can just stay fit. Because if he stays fit, we've got a real chance of doing something this season.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's just... What I don't like is because he is such a silky player, when for me, you know, I've said that I think Arsenal fans can be a bit of a cheap date with Ødegaard sometimes. He can flash them with a little bit of silky skill and everyone goes, oh, it's amazing. Look how well he's... It's like, no, a player of that ability can do so much. So I'm just saying we should have high standards for him. We know he's capable of it. He shows that today. He shows everything that he can do. The leadership you're talking about. Some of the stuff on the ball. This is when you can enjoy the flicks and the tricks and the vision, because he's doing every other part of it. He gets a chance, he buries it. He makes the right passes. He's creating all sorts of havoc. When he's like this, he's so hard to play against. He's playing at an extremely, extremely high level. And you just look at and admire some of his passages of play. There's little back heels round the corner, which not everyone sees. He's got eyes in the back of his head. There's the ability. Every pass is weighted perfectly. And for me, the most encouraging thing, I'll say it again, his shooting has improved tenfold. And part of it comes down to what you're saying, Matt. He's aggressive with his shooting now. He looks like he didn't get the ball and think, hey, you know, I've got the Alex Haleb virus where I need to constantly look for a pass. No, if there's the opportunity, the trigger's getting pulled. And it's bang. And obviously today there was a goal to enjoy for the fans. But it was testament, I should say, to how well he's playing. And we are going to need him on top tilt if we are going to get ourselves over the line. So long may it continue. Matt, let's move on to this as well, because we talk about it all the time, but I don't think it stopped becoming a big subject for us. We are the goal difference destroyers. Let's think about what we've put, basically put in the goal difference category, if you like. So at the moment, we now sit on 45 goal difference. We are not only 6 goal difference ahead of Liverpool, but now 10 goals up on Man City. Considering that when we started this little run, I'm pretty sure City had 5 goals on us. So we've swung 15 goals on City in the space of about 3 or 4 games. And at this point, if City were to lose against Liverpool, and I know that would bring its own problems for us, but we could ultimately draw a game to get ourselves, you know, head-to-head on points. And suddenly we'd have what they had last year, where it's like, you ain't getting 10 goals on us right now, the way we're playing, the way you're playing. How have we gone about this, and how significant do you think the goal difference factor could be come the end of the season?
So 7 wins, 31 goals scored, 3 conceded. So, you know, we've added a 28 goal difference. I think United's goal difference is 0. I mean, it certainly was something like that a couple of games ago. I think in
minus two.
I think in 2024. We're only 7 goals behind what they've scored in the whole season. We're absolutely flying offensively. Long may it continue. I think the goal difference is important. I think it's rare that you win the league on goal difference, although it's been done twice and we were the recipients on one of those occasions. So it can happen, especially, I mean, it's a three-horse race and everything is so tight. What would you give? It's an extra point, ultimately. It's an extra point. So so it's super important that we can keep going. But more than that, it's relentless when you're a Liverpool or a City fan and you turn on, it's like, oh, for God's sake. We've seen it. It becomes a mental battle as much as anything. And psychologically, it's, oh, they've just knocked another six. They knocked another five. Oh, fuck. Like they're on a roll. In the same way that it is demoralizing when Liverpool score a last minute winner or City score a late goal. That's demoralizing. But this, I think Odegaard was asked and he said, I feel like we're stronger this season than we were last. And I agree with him. And I think City are weaker this season than they were last year. And I think Liverpool will fall away. So I think we've got a good chance.
I love that, Matt. Absolutely love it. And I agree with you very much. You know, on that note, I think part of why we are stronger and City are weaker, and, you know, it comes down to who are you going to rely on to drag you over the line? Now, the strength of City is they've got a whole host of players who will step up. But the reality is, for me, when I look at City, the headline is this is the changing of the guard. City is still a great team, but now they rely on Phil Foden. It was always going to happen at some point. I've been really encouraged as an Arsenal fan by the form or lack of by Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne on his day is an absolutely outrageous player. Technically as good as anyone in the league. There's no question about it. His days are few and far between these days. He looks like he's still having fitness issues, not being able to manage, you know, the requirements of the league week in, week out. And so they're switching to Phil Foden, who, let's be clear, is playing at an extremely high level. But we're relying on Saka, we're relying on Odegaard, and all the people we're relying on have a year's more experience and they've already been relied upon for a while. We were relying on Saka and Odegaard and that last year. Now, we've brought them some extra backup in the form of Declan Rice, and Phil Foden, who's never been the guy they've relied upon, has actually had some of his support removed because De Bruyne is not doing it. Haaland seems a little bit hit and miss this year. I mean, he's still unbelievable, but he's not just doing it on his own either. So I agree. I think part of it comes down to who, you know, who's going to be your talisman in those situations. And I think City are asking new people to step up. And there's always the opportunity that they don't always meet the mark in those key moments. Oh, you're on mute. Wouldn't be a pod, an AOP.
Haaland's on 18 Premier League goals. Last season at this time, it felt like he was on 30.
Yeah.
It felt like he was scoring a hat-trick every week. That was demoralising. That's not to say he's not going to go on a tear and score in every game for the rest of the season. I could easily see that happening. But he's on 18. So there's hope there. Who was the player who, when it was a draw in the second half of the game, kept on stepping up? Gundogan. Over and over and over again. I got fucking sick of that guy. You know, he's not gone. Phil Foden is doing it at the moment, but, you know, they're going to miss that bit of experience in the running. But we've added Declan Rice and Kai Havertz. And that's just like, that's just pure muscle in the engine room. That's like what you think. We're not going to run out of legs. Let me tell you, you're not going to be dead on our feet when we've got those two going again and again and again and again. And then we've got more players coming back. We've got Thomas Partey, who's basically been on holiday for the whole season, who can add some value. We've got Timber, who might be able to add some value. You know, we've got Tomiyasu coming back. But ultimately, I think it's all going to come down to can we keep... Well, there's two things. Can we keep our key players fit? Can Saliba, Rice, Odegaard, Saka... You know, I think those are the key ones. Stay fit for the whole season. And then can we do it away from home? Because we haven't done it away from home yet. We've got to start Man United, City, Spurs. Those are the big ones. I'll tell you an interesting thought I'd love to get your perspective on. Because suddenly I think we got Brentford on Saturday and obviously David Raya's on loan. So I've heard that he can't play in that game. So Ramsdale will be playing between the sticks. I don't know. I got a bit freaked out. What do you think? Were you, because David Raya has been just a revelation this year as well.
He is exuding a calm at the back, which I don't think that Ramsdale starting on in of itself removes, but it just breaks a continuation of a team right now. Like, it absolutely is a team that picks itself. I will actually be at the game as well. I can't wait. I'm going to be there watching Arsenal take on Brentford and
cheering on Aaron.
I've got to be honest, Matt. I don't know how many times I've walked into the Emirates or Highbury before that with as much confidence thinking we should absolutely smash these guys. It happens at rare points during Arsenal fandom where you can just go, no, it's gonna have to be a big score here, I would imagine.
You can't stop saying that.
Oh, mate, I'm not scared of Brentford. I'm really not scared of Brentford. I'm not scared of any of these guys. I'm scared of everyone.
I'm scarred.
I was not scared of Sheffield United. I wasn't scared of Newcastle at home. I'm damn sure not scared of Brentford at home, having their worst season in a while. Yes, to answer your question, the Aaron Ramsdale thing adds in a slight unknown. But everyone wants in on this team right now. Everyone wants to come in. Aaron will be licking his lips and going, as long as I don't do anything completely stupid, I can hit a few moonrakers and start getting people on the break and looking good and, you know, facing three shots a game and getting a clean sheet for it. You know, he'll be wanting to get involved in that. So I'm not by no means petrified. Obviously, Ivan Toney is a guy who can do the kinds of things that can cause issues to someone like Aaron. But listen, I do expect the way that we've been absolutely strangling teams, just Anaconda just choke you out. I don't expect the Brentford are going to have loads of opportunities. And I feel we're on a roll right now that any team that was rolling into town would be treading lightly. And I don't think Brentford will be any different. So, Matt, there's a little bit, because we are at the end of the pod now, but we've got some AOP, AOB, and there's a couple of things. But firstly, you've heard it already. There is a new rap getting dropped this week, okay? If you're listening to this, Patreon people, you're listening to it live, there will be a rap being released, maybe even tomorrow. If you're listening to this on free to air, it will already be out. Do check our socials, our YouTube channel, The Arsenal Opinion. It will be out on that. If not, I'm at iJohnnyCochran on my socials. The rap will be there. And at the Grove, Matt would have shared it as well, no doubt. So do check it out. Matt, you're one of only two people that have heard it so far. Anything to say?
In the words of Josh Kroenke, be excited. That's all I'll say. Be excited.
Yeah, I'm back in the booth and it is getting dropped. So, and also a little bit of a request if you're listening to this. If you do get to listen to the rap, make sure you share it. I know you might not have before. There's no swear words in this. But if you can share it on social media, we'll all be very thankful. Try and get it to a new audience. That would be very much appreciated. Apart from that, we're at the end of this On The Whistle podcast. I think it's been an absolute pleasure, Matt. You've got to come and talk to other gooners after results like this, haven't you?
Yeah, and thank you to all the patrons for jumping in, commenting, being part of the conversation. It's not the same without you. And we're excited. There's a ton of content. This week, we'll have a Before the Whistle for Brentford. We'll be live and On The Whistle at Brentford. Johnny will be at the game. I'm jealous he's going to be at the game. but we're marching on. We're the juggernaut. It just keeps on going, right?
Yes, we are. Absolutely. Thank you again to our patrons. And our Discord at the moment is absolutely jumping off. All of our patrons talking amongst each other. It's all things Arsenal and it's all positive. So if you're listening to this, free to air, why don't you take the plunge, sign up to our Patreon, price of a cup of coffee a month, and you can get all of these instant reaction pods live when you're absolutely red hot and wanting to speak Arsenal and get involved in the chat as well. Apart from that, all it's left for me to say is ciao for now.
Social Podcast Network.